ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Tell us why you came here to the Toronto ISKCON of Silicon ISKCON of Silicon Valley, to the Toronto ISKCON Temple. And we have an extra microphone, so we, what brought you here today? Was there a point in time when you had a choice to make and you
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
First time I met you in
speak in the mic. Into the mic.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. I met you first in Chicago when you came for book distribution in our neighborhood temple. You were so inspiring that the whole day I came to know that you are going to be here on this week, so I love to see you here and be with you here.
No, thank you very much. Great to see you again. The topic is, the moment you decided to come, what was your impetus?
It's been a really fun weekend, and yesterday I was here for a lot of festivities, and I was going to come from the Bhagavatam class this morning, and I got distracted and missed it, and so I was kind of like eagerly waiting at home when I showed up around noon, because I couldn't wait any longer, so that brought me here.
Great, nice. It's good to have such enthusiasm to go to a place where you know that you'll be able to get spiritual association. One of the main ways in which anyone in any discipline who are spiritually advanced, sincerely practicing, it's a medicine that you take through your ears. And when it enters the ears, then it goes into your heart. And when it enters your heart, then it has a remedial effect, which is called apavarga. So, does anybody have any complexities in their life right now? Let's see, three people, five, six, seven. I mean, if you take an inventory, you might find on any given day that there are several things that are worrying you. Is that, am I speaking out of turn here? Is that two things? Two or three? There may be worries about life, not the least of which is, how long will I live? There's a teaching in the beginning of our book, the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction, where the author speaks about how we're being stalked by a tiger. And how would you feel if everywhere you went in Toronto there was a tiger following you, who was hungry, by the way, and really liked to eat people? Well, you'd probably be a little nervous. So this is one of the reasons that people feel a little nervous, or they feel sort of a deep-seated anxiety, according to the Bhagavad Gita, is because we don't know how long we're going to be here. We didn't really... I was talking to some people yesterday out in front of the old City Hall, and I was showing them the Bhagavad Gita, some of them for the first time, and trying to explain in a nutshell, because most people are in a hurry, what it's all about. And I told several people that actually this book points out that we're not our bodies. The body's like a vehicle that we're driving around in for a little while. And I pointed out that we didn't really get a lease for it either. No lease agreement. Did you get one?
No.
Didn't sign one when you were a baby? Maybe a footprint on a contract somewhere? And it's actually, if you think about it, there's no guarantee. And most people, when they hear that, they heartily agree. It's not something you think about every day, but if you do think about it, it's a little bit challenging. And so the author of the Bhagavad Gita, the introduction to the Gita, points out that we all have this sort of deep-seated sense that of at any time I can change, drastic change can come into my life, not the least of which I may have to leave this body. And so there's this cycle of worry that I go through from, according to the Bhagavad Gita, In materialistic life, I'm attached to the surroundings I'm in now, and I'm worried about a lot of things, like death. And this is called samsara. I go from one worrisome temporary position to the next. And so the verse I just quoted, it says, Satam prasangam avirya sambhido, bhavanti hrit karna rasayana kata, points out that there's a kind of medicine that you can take to cure that problem, that problem of samsara that comes up for us when we're forced to die and take another rebirth. And it starts from the heart level, because the reason that I'm in the various situations I'm in, as I mentioned, is our association, and our association forms our consciousness. And we're very, very creative. The whatever state of consciousness I'm in helps to create the environment around me, but not the least of which is this body. Is this getting too esoteric? Is everyone following okay? All right? So, the kind of effect of the medicine of hearing from sincere people about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and hearing spiritual sound vibration in the form of chanting is called apavarga. So the word pavarga means the complexities of material life that I've just described. But when you take the medicine through your ears, it enters the heart and it reverses the process. It takes away that disease. And instead of being implicated in material life, then one starts one's journey back to the spiritual world and helps to spiritualize everything in one's life. That's called apavarga. So the verse claims that this all takes place in a spiritual environment, and the spiritual environment is defined by the kind of sound vibration that's within the environment. And generally sound vibration comes from people. They tune the channel. So if you don't like what you're being subjected to in your life, then you have the wherewithal, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to change the subject. And that means fine-tuning the kind of sound that you listen to. And that will do it. So if you're around others who are spiritually interested and they know the science of sound, they'll help you with that to create transcendental sound vibration. And that'll go into your ears, it'll go into your heart. The main job that a spiritual practitioner has, said my teacher once, is to put him or herself in front of transcendental or spiritual sound. So let me give you a scenario. Let's say you have a hard day at work. Possible? Okay, so that's possible. You might have a rough day sometime, right? So let's say you have a rough day and then you come back to your refuge, which is your apartment or your house or your van, wherever you may live. And so then you have a choice of how to deal with the feeling of angst you have and the kind of built-up stress that you've developed by having a hard day. So one scenario might be that you turn on the television. Are there still televisions out there available? Yes? Okay, so let's say you turn on the television and you put on, for instance, something like the 24-hour news cycle. That's one scenario, and you listen to that. There's a lot of good news lately, right? Yeah?
No.
No? Okay. On the other side, you might instead tune into some spiritual sound. For instance, the science of mantra is mentioned in the ancient Vedas. Books of wisdom, they say, anavriti shabda, that if you tune in to transcendental or spiritual sound, that it will uncover the anxiety, it will take away the anxiety, and it will help you to see your higher self. And when you see that, then you'll feel centered, and you'll naturally be free from anxiety. Anavriti shabda, it means spiritual sound vibration. Purifies your consciousness and helps you to come out of material anxiety altogether. So you know, you have on one hand, you can tune in to the vibration of the happenings of the world. And generally, news stations pick out the choices of anxiety-producing events in the world, do they not? Am I correct about that? That's what sells digital space, is the most horrendous things that might have happened, and then people tune in. So if you listen to that, versus you listen to transcendental sound vibration, the Sri Upanishad, one of the oldest books that teach yoga, say, Anyarevahur sambhavad, anyarahur sambhavad, iti shushumatiranam yenas tadvichachakshade. There's a completely different effect in your life, a result, from hearing material sound or hearing spiritual sounds. So if you listen, if you put yourself deliberately in front of spiritual sound, then it'll help you to overcome all the problems and anxieties you have in your life. And therefore, the main choice, my teacher used to say, that we have is how to place ourselves in front of a higher sound vibration. And that's something that we have to work out a little bit. So I'm saying all this by way of congratulating you all for coming here tonight. That was a long preamble. So some practical points. Here are several of the most fundamental teachings that come from the Bhagavad Gita that you can employ in any time and experience shift in your life in a positive direction. Because it's not always so apparent how to improve one's life without some practical measures that are at hand. I may have an ideal of where I'd like to move in my life, for instance, developing better habits, perhaps. It's a lot harder to develop, it seems to me, good habits than it is bad ones. Or is it just me? But I seem to drift into bad habits. Good habits take a little bit of deliberation ahead of time, deciding which direction you'd like to go. In other words, how to improve yourself. Does anybody concur?
Yes.
Okay, a few people. Here from the basic teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. One is called Karma Yoga. Everyone please say Karma Yoga. So karma comes from a root word in Sanskrit, kri, which means to act. And the basic premise is that all of us are active. Even when you go to sleep at night, you're active. So we all have to work. And there's different ways to work in the world. There's three basic paths of work. One path is the path of acquisition. Just to put it in sort of colloquial terms, you know, working hard to get things and put them in a kind of an arrangement that will please me. And if I can arrange my environment and I have enough things that I need, then I'll be happy. Does that sound at all familiar? Is that oversimplification of a kind of a path? There's an idea that if I work hard enough and I, for instance, if I get enough money and I live in the right place, then I might be happy. Or have you ever had the instinct or the urge that if you just get one more thing by Amazon Prime, that maybe you'll feel better? Yes or yes? Okay. So that's one path, let's call it the path of acquisition. And then there's a path of renunciation. Have you ever been in a situation where you got stuff after working really hard for it, and you dreamed about getting it, and then you got it and you didn't like it all of a sudden? Please say yes.
Yes.
Thank you. It's altogether possible. It's a principle, actually, that's described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Bhoga Tyaga. It means there's a tendency to want to enjoy the things of the world, but as soon as you get them, then you want to get rid of them again. It's a real problem because it's like a pendulum swinging from one side to another. And there's actually, you know, a description of the path of living like that. There are those who subscribe to the idea that if I just get rid of all my stuff and I don't touch the world at all and I don't desire anything, then I'll be happy. And the other idea is that inflame the desire as much as possible, develop it, and work as hard as you can to fulfill all your desires. Of course, these are, you know, generalizations, but these describe the two paths I'm trying to point out. And then there's a middle path, which is the path I'm calling right now Karma Yoga, which we could also define as the path of dedication. Now, the Bhagavad Gita summarily dismisses the two paths I mentioned first. First, the path of acquisition will never make us happy, for the simple fact is that we're incompatible with the energy of this world. We're a higher energy than what surrounds us. And I'll just give you a brief philosophical basis for this. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the gradations of energy. So one of the lowest of energies is the material energy. He also calls it Bhinna Prakriti, or separated energy. It's kind of separated from the spiritual energy. So here's the catalog of energies if you're keeping score at home. Bhumir apo analo vayu kammano bhutir evacha ahankara ityame bhina prakritir ashtada. So that's just a list of material elements. Are you ready for it? Say yes. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So these are called the gross and subtle material energies. What are they called? That's right. So if we were to give it, if we were to look at our bodies, we could actually identify these various elements, right? So we could say, if you just examine your arm, what's in there? What's in your arm? What do you got in there? Okay, what's it? Just name it in terms of the elements I just said. You got a little water. Come on, feel your arm. Is it squishy? What's that? It's water. There's a lot of water in there. And what else you got? There's something hard in there. It's kind of like earth. If we burn off all the water, you're going to get a little bag of earth. And you could go through your body and actually name the elements. Now, when you get into the subtler elements, you might say, what's all that? Mind, intelligence, ego, or even ether. Ether means space. Space is a kind of interesting element listed in the Bhagavad Gita because we need space to make sense of anything. Like if your space key ever breaks on your computer and you start typing and there's no way to make a space, nothing makes any sense. Like there's space between us right now, right? And you're probably appreciating that to some degree. Space between all of you. Space is there, here, there, and everywhere. That's called ether. And then mind is like software. My father used to ask me, he's like, what is it? Where's everything going? And I still don't know. Many of you probably do. But, what it is a very subtle thing. And the body, if you compare it in modern terms to a computer, the physical body is like the hard drive, and then the mind, the intelligence, is like the software that runs it. What's missing in that? You have software, hardware. Well, don't use words like soul, because that might be, like, unpack it a little bit. What's missing from that? The user, thank you. So who's the user? You are. So your eye, for instance, if you look in an eye, if you want a little homework for tonight, that'll freak you out. And just stand in the mirror for a while and just look at one eye. And then turn the light on and off, or a flashlight, and you'll notice your eye is a lens. It's just opening and closing, and you go, that's weird. You look at yourself and you go, like, I have nice eyes, but when you actually look closely, you're going to go, like, wow, that's strange. There's a lens, like a camera lens in there. Your whole body's like that. It's a mechanical, it's a biomechanical apparatus that you're using right now. So Krishna names the elements this body's made of, and most of the world's made of that, those same elements. Then he says, Aparyamitastanyam prakritim vidimiparam jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. Besides that, he says, there's a superior energy. And that superior energy is consciousness. It's categorically different from material energy. And that's what you are. That's what I am, ultimately, the user. I'm the one looking out through the lens, but I'm not the lens. I'm not my arm, I'm not my eye, but I'm actually the conscious viewer who's looking out, and that's who we are. So knowing that you're not the body, and that you're actually the soul within the body, and in the path of dedication, there's a basic premise of understanding that I can't be happy interacting with the lower energies and trying to, or at least interacting with them in a way that I'm considering them the source of my happiness. And also, I can't renounce them because I can't really live without them. Without a body, you don't have an apparatus to function in this world. So giving it up completely or stopping your senses or stopping your mind is also not possible. It doesn't stop. Have you ever noticed that? And that's the verdict of the Bhagavad Gita. Your mind doesn't stop. It's continually going. So here we come then to the path of dedication. And that means rather than trying to hold on to material things or try to enjoy them for oneself, or rather than artificially saying that I reject them all, which is like walking to the Bank of America and saying, or the Bank of Canada, sorry, and saying, I reject all the money in this bank, and sounding like a fool. You take the path of dedication, and that's the path of bhakti or karma yoga, which means to use everything that you have in a higher service, selfless service. And there's an amazing statement that's given in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which says that this is the path to instant satisfaction. When you think about how to enjoy for yourself, you don't even have to try, but you'll start feeling an anxiety. But if you start thinking about how to do selfless service, the path of dedication, then you'll naturally start to feel satisfaction. So when you dedicate what you have for a higher cause, and the highest cause is mentioned as giving back to your original divine source, the person who actually is sustaining you, who's sustaining the whole universe, coming back to that original conscious personal origin of everything we call Krishna. If you dedicate your energies in that way, then you'll feel satisfied. So those are the three paths, and the path of karma yoga or bhakti yoga that we teach here is the middle path of dedication or selfless service. And one of the ways to start that amidst the complexities of your life is to start giving away part of the fruit of your work. So you work, you earn something, and you give part of that away for another cause. And here's one of the ways in which it will bring self-realization into your life very quickly. Who here likes to give away their money? Raise your hand. See, it's really hard, isn't it? One person in the back, good for you. Okay, two, one in the front, one in the back. It's not a question that a lot of people jump at, especially when you're in a church. Like, okay, give it up now. So, you know, we're a little hesitant. You know, who likes to give away all their money? And it's like, I don't know about that guy. So the thing is, if you give away some of it for a higher cause, what's the first thing you'll notice? You know, that little pinch where you're going through your mind and you're thinking, should I, shouldn't I? I think I'll give 50, no, 25, oh, you know. And then suddenly you just raise your hand and you say, I'm going to give this. So what's the first thing you'll notice when you actually dedicate it and you give it away? Okay, I'll make a suggestion. The first thing you'll notice is that you're still alive. That's a revelation, because all my instincts are telling me if you give away your stuff, especially your money, you're going to die. There's a sense in this world, an anxiety that I'm not going to survive, which is artificial because I'm not my body. I'm actually the soul within the body that always survives. I never die. And when you start giving away some of the fruit of your work, even just a little bit at a time, you start getting this revelation. It's like, wow, I'm actually transcendental to this attachment to the things that I think are keeping me alive. So that's one practice that you can start at any time. You can start giving away your stuff. And we're not even saying you have to put it in that box over there, although it's not a bad idea. You can give it away anywhere, and you'll notice the same thing. And Krishna mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita as a valid way to start your spiritual practice, is start volunteering. Start doing selfless service where you're not getting anything in return. Start doing service where you're not in the limelight. You're not doing it so you can take a selfie on Facebook and say, hey, I just cleaned up the bay or something like that. Just do service for service, and you'll see for yourself that you're a bigger person. You grow, and you actually start to go beyond the bodily conception of life. Does that sound practical?
Yes.
You can give stuff away, right? Say yes.
Yes.
I'm not going to call on you. So that's one path, or one practice that you can do is karma yoga, and you can start at any time to dedicate. Another practice that you can take up immediately, if you wish, is has more to do, it's more of a mental adjustment. Are you open for that?
Yes.
Okay, a few of you. This is a way to adjust your attitude. So attitude's very important in life because it determines the way we make decisions and the way we move about the world, the way we react to other people. So this is one of the suggestions given in the Bhakti teachings, that you adjust your attitude so that whatever happens to you in your life, you try to extract the lesson from it. What would be the alternative to that? Rather than when something happens to you, let's say something doesn't go your way, what could you do as a reaction rather than taking the valuable lesson from it right away? You could get angry. Has anybody ever taken the stance of being a victim, like everyone's against me? There's a whole science of victimology. You can study it in the university. You can become a victim or think the whole world's against you, or you can adjust your attitude, and this is the suggestion given in the Bhakti teachings, that adjust your attitude so that whatever happens to you in your life, you take the lesson. Do you suppose that you would be lead a richer life if the things that happen to you, when they happen, you take as a lesson rather than reacting in such a way that you become morose or angry? What do you think? Okay, did you say yes? And you said yes. Anybody else said yes? I want an actual vote here. This is a democracy. Okay. 1, 2, 3. A richer life if you take the lesson from everything rather than becoming a victim or becoming angry. Be counted now. Okay. Several of you. I suggest you try it. And because actually this is really, when you look at the Bhakti teachings, the whole world that we live in is meant for refinement. It's not some punishment. And we're living in a world that gives us the opportunity to refine ourselves more and more and to learn from the environment. And it's actually benevolent. It's meant for our upliftment, not to suppress us. So this is one of the practices, and it's to adjust your attitude. Do you think it's possible to do that? Can you remember to do that? If something happens to you now, you'll take the lesson from it? Kelki? Can I get a verbal yes? It's like in the emergency row in the airline, you need a verbal yes. Okay, so that's two things. And the third thing is the mantra. Mantra is for everybody. Say, mantra is for everybody. Yeah, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu distributed a mantra and he said, you could take this mantra anywhere you go. Benefit of it is it's portable. You could take it with you anywhere. And you can vibrate the mantra. When you're born, you get a free tongue thrown in, a couple of ears, all that's necessary for the mantra, tongue and two ears. And then you can chant the mantra, and we claim, based on the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that if you chant the mantra, you'll have a better life. And somebody agree with that or disagree? Okay, it's fine. Either way, because it still works, even if you disagree. So you just have to try it. And you repeat the mantra. So there's two ways of doing it, or at least. One way is that you have a group chanting, and you can do it in your home like we just did, and scare the neighbors. Or you can do it yourself quietly as a prayer. And this morning, here at 5 a.m., we had a prayer circle. Actually, it was a huge circle. There was 40 of us here at 5 a.m. And we sat in a big circle right where you're all sitting. And we had this for an hour and a half. We had a chanting session. We all chanted together, and we chanted quietly to ourselves. It kind of sounds like this: Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now let's see if you could do it. Excellent. Now, if you want to start a solid home practice doing that, you hold up your right hand, I'm not going to make you swear anything. I'm just going to show you how to count on your hand. You put your thumb on the segment of your middle finger, and say Krishna 1. Now move it to the bottom, say Krishna 2. Bottom of the little finger, Krishna 3. Middle of the little finger, say Krishna 4. Top of the little finger, say Krishna 5. Top of the middle of ring finger, say Krishna 6. Top of the middle finger, say Krishna 7. Top of the index finger, say Krishna 8. Middle of the index finger, say Krishna 9. Bottom of the index finger, say Krishna 10. Let's do it together. Ready? Krishna 1, Krishna 2, Krishna 3, Krishna 4, Krishna 5, Krishna 6, Krishna 7, Krishna 9, Krishna 10. So if you'd like to start a bona fide home practice of this chanting, you can do at least, now you know you can do at least 10 mantras and count them, right? And if you keep a record of how much you chant and you pick a minimum, this is what the great teachers of bhakti recommend, that at home you take a little time every day to meditate on the mantra. It means shut off anything with an on-off switch and focus your mind and then say the mantra and listen to the sound very carefully. And you'll notice a shift in your life if you keep this up. And you'll hear that the mantra is different from other sounds, and it'll also have a profound effect on your life. Are you buying this?
Yes.
Does it sound reasonable?
Yes.
Would you like to try it sometime?
Yes.
Okay, so if you'd like to try it, then you can write down on a pad of paper how many mantras you'd like to say every day and then practice it. And I recommend you get in touch with one of the devotees. Mahabhagavat Prabhu, could you stand up for a second? Mahabhagavat Prabhu helps to organize many of the people who come here who like to chant at home and they'd like to keep a record and report to somebody. He can show you somebody who can work with you as a coach to help you in your chanting. So three paths. First one I mentioned was called Karma Yoga, the path of dedication. Try dedicating some of your work to the Supreme. Give away some of the fruit and see if you survive. And if you do, you'll notice there's shift in your consciousness from giving away. Because here's the point. It's going to be taken away anyway. I hate to break this to everybody. So this doctrine is really called preemptive giving. If you give it away to a high cause before it's taken away, you get credit. What do you get if it's taken away before you give it away? Nothing. And that reminds me of a joke I once heard. There was two guys walking down the street here in Toronto. No, you don't have a problem like that here. I'll say New York. And a guy jumps out with a gun and says, okay, both of you give me all your money. So they're friends, and one of them says to the gunman, so no problem, I'll give it to you, just one second. Saved by the conch. And he turns to his friend, and he says, Bill, here's that $20 I owe you. Confirmed. So preemptive giving means be smart and give away what's going to be taken anyway as soon as you can. And chant the mantra. And the third path I mentioned? Karma yoga chanting and? What? And change your attitude. Learn to take whatever happens to you as a lesson. And you'll be happy wherever you go. Thank you very much for coming. If you have any more questions afterwards, you can contact Mahabhagavat here and he'll direct you to one of the 20 coaches that are here available 24 hours a day. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, hey! Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman.